Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you. And you too.
I was just watching a video of a kid who won a contest. I think that was sponsored by Mark Zuckerberg. And it was a contest for 13 to 18 year olds to make a video just about their excitement about science and technology. And
nice.
It was I forget how long, it was 5 minutes or so, video about Einstein's quantum theory and explaining that, you know, on a down to earth level. And which he did, which was really fascinating, but also which I've completely forgotten already. And I watched that like 10 minutes ago.
I was here when you watched
and
that.
Yeah, it. I was captivated by it and it was wonderful. But I just think, and I've been thinking about all the things that I've been coming across the last, you know, year, a couple of years, especially with the internet these days. I mean, being exposed to just a tremendous amount of information that I don't know if it's just me or if it's I don't have a modern enough brain to retain information at the speed it comes at you. And there are, I mean, one of the books I'm reading right now is all kind of about how we think and what our brain does kind of behind the scenes that we don't know about. And our brain already like completely warps our reality and keeps information and stuff from us without us knowing, and keeps us from learning new things purposely, because else we'll be overwhelmed.
Right.
And I just wonder if that, like, my brain's like that, we're done. There's too much. You're already remembering the Small Wonder theme. We can't remember anything more.
Seriously. You filled it up. I was listening to this neurophysicist or neuroscientist talk on NPR, and he,
that, for those playing the board game, that's the Portlandiest thing we'll be saying all night, probably.
He was talking about how, to a small child, you can plant memories in their head that never existed. And so you can say things like, hey, remember on Saturday when we went and got ice cream? And they're like, no. And then like a couple days later, you do the same thing. He's like, remember on Saturday when we went and got ice cream? And they're like, well, maybe. No. Right. And then a couple days later, you're like, well, last Saturday we went and got ice cream. Uh-huh. And they're like, well, yeah. And then you can continue with the theme and they will start to build a memory around the
absolutely.
Seed.
Well, and I think, I don't think that stops in childhood, because I
don't, of course,
because our brain needs to contextualize things and put it somewhere. Right. And so it just either puts it in a space that's kind of similar or it constructs everything around it so that it has a place for it to like hold on to.
Right.
But I didn't purposely do this, but I realized one of the things that I was doing inadvertently with some of the kids I watch, you know how in my car I have those car air fresheners, the tree air fresheners, and I have the Vanillarama and I have the new car scent, and I use them both at the same time, and it's wonderful. And I realized that for the rest of their lives, because it's always pretty strong in there, because I always just like, and then I put it in the vent and I crank the vent up and everything smells like vanilla and new car, and it's wonderful. But I realize that every time that they smell something like that, like really strongly, they're going to be remembered. And I think about them, you
expect
know,
expect the smack from the back of their head.
You expect somebody to shout at them. I've done that too, where like they're either being rowdy or like they didn't have their seatbelt on or whatever. And I would safely like kind of pump the brakes and send them smacking into the back.
I do the same with Nick.
But I've done that too. If they were mouthing off, I'll make sure like no one's following behind me and I'll slam on their brakes to get their attention. That's wonderful. It's good to love what you do, I guess, is the whole point of that story.
The parenting podcast.
I know, the bad parenting podcast. They need a third host, perhaps. yes. Anyway, so there's stuff sitting on the table here. Is that just random or am I, is there a reasoning?
No, well, that was, those were some of the things that also came with this. Nick was in in Seattle up at Archie McPhee's, which is one of our favorite little oddity places.
Okay.
And it's kind of an adult toy store, I guess is probably, you know, they have everything from like
a Spencer's type thing with all the goofy. Yeah,
right. And it's just tons of random everything. So, Nick picked that up for you.
Oh, this is for me?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Yes, this is. Oh, it's an ear guard protector, and they're little hairnets, but just for your ears. And they have like a picture of a spider and an earwig, but with like a little X through it. And it's called Ear Guard. On the front, it has a cartoon earwig saying, "I want to live inside your ear."
But you can't because you got an ear guard.
But you have
on.
The ear guard. Right. Oh my God. So the second time, I broke two arms when I was growing up, different times. And I think it was the second time I went in, I was waiting. I was in the ER part, so they had checked at me, but I was still waiting for them to come back or whatever. And the little bay across when they just had the little like sheet curtains or like
right.
or whatever. And like, you're expected to like, that's private or whatever. Like everyone just standing like cattle in this stainless steel cold room. But the guy across from me kept banging on the side of his head. And he was kind of doing that for a while. And he didn't like look overtly like crazy or on angel dust, which apparently, remember that was the big craze in the 80s. Everyone was on angel dust. I don't even know what that is.
Like kill your mother.
And you like jump out of a window thinking you can fly. No, that was PCP, which I think was before. I don't know what any of those things are. Anyway,
I have no idea.
So he was banging on the side of his head. And I think we finally, no, he finally was like, oh, and like kind of this like finally type thing. And was kind of celebrating. There wasn't any doctors around. He was waiting too. And we asked him what was going on. And there was an actual earwig that had crawled all the way inside of his ear and got stuck and would not come out. And so he was banging on it, finally banged it loose.
Chekhov from Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. But I'll always remember that. And every time I see an earwig, you just remember that guy banging on his head and then the earwig falling out. They had to drown those things out. It's disgusting.
It's the worst.
But now I will never have to do that because
you never
I have
to do that. You have ear guards.
I have ear guards. And yeah, so there's also a plastic alligator and then a half a pickle.
It's a finger pickle.
A finger pickle.
And so it's a pickle.
A pickle that fits over your finger.
Just a little gherkin.
Aren't we all?
Just a little gherkin.
Oh, I can use my new...
Nice.
Thanks to Dan for sending that in.
Yay.
We now have a clown horn, and I was trying
about
to.
That, Paul.
It played to. Does he not like clown horns?
No. It's,
oh, that's right. It's very morning show.
Does he know? Zoo?
It's not.
You know, it's very gimmicky and stuff. Maybe it's Tig Notaro just doing an impression.
We have her in a box in the corner. Hey, Tig.
I've been
getting all this stuff out of my. Oh, and the spaghetti fork actually was out here too, but that was just so I came in here
the back scratcher because freakishly. I didn't have the alligator foot back scratcher.
Yes.
So I on Twitter we subscribe to the Portland Alerts Twitter feed, which is just from the. Police station and from Portland.
Ooh, it's like kind of having a scanner.
It's kind of like having a scanner, but it's on your Twitter feed. And this came across the desk the other day, and it was just Portland police are headed to the 3700 block of Northeast Broadway. Report of a reckless bicyclist just crashed into a wall, dropped a bag of marijuana, and fled on foot. That's the whole thing.
I like how it's not like a public, like, be on the lookout or whatever. No, just no. Like, to let you know, there's another crazy guy on a bicycle that crashed
into a wall, dropped a bag of marijuana, and fled on foot.
The best one is like reading the small town newspaper police reports, which are
awesome.
Just wonderful. And my favorite one, and I think it was from somewhere in Southern Oregon, but I can't remember for sure, but it was... police called on suspicion of finding a baby in a trash can. Upon further inspection, police discovered it was just a burrito.
Nice.
Which I don't know. I don't know what the steps A through Z, like when the call came in and why, and then discovering that it was a burrito.
Aww.
It's the untold story, really. That.
And similarly, in the Portland subreddit, there was the title... Anyone missing an adult ram by Northeast 24th and Wasco? And he had this like potato quality picture of a goat. And so of course he gets the flood of people. No, that's a goat, not a ram.
Did he do that to troll people or did he just?
No. So it turns out that it was Goatman Dan's goat. And it looks like one of his bucks. I sent Dan a message. I think that's Sully, named for Sullivan's Gulch. Hopefully he's on the goat roundup.
Is this all on the Twitter feed?
No, no. This one is on the Portland subreddit on reddit.com.
Okay, okay. So I missed that part.
Somebody posted the request, and then there's the whole dialogue of people correcting the fact that it's not a ram, it's a goat. And whose goat it is. And
it's lanolin.
It's lanolin, not oil in their wool. Just for reference, in case you're wondering. Yeah.
Do you ever touch sheeple, like on the sheep or like at right after it's been sheared?
Yes. So yeah, I was in 4-H. So, okay. Yeah.
What are the 4-H's for?
My head for clear thinking, my heart for greater loyalty, my hands for larger service, and my health for better living for my club, my community, my country, and my world.
Wow. Nice. See, I didn't really ever know anyone in 4-H.
I
don't know if they didn't have a club or like all my friends were dairy farmers.
So I was
like,
a San Diego County all-star and I went to the state conference.
Did they retire your jersey delegate or your barn boots or whatever hanging from the rafters?
I never did any livestock. I only did dogs. And so dogs and like cooking. And
not simultaneously.
And but I raised 5 guide dogs for the blind as a 4-H program.
Okay.
Program. Honor.
No, I take that back. Then I did know somebody that raised guide dog. I don't know if it's through 4-H though, but they did raise a guide dog.
Yeah. Honor, Gia, Dusty, Hula, and Petunia were my dogs' names that I raised.
Honor.
I barely knew her.
Oh, Honor.
I'm gonna do that once again for
Honor.
One more for Paul.
Honor.
I barely knew her.
Perfect. Hey, Paul.
You can advertise on the Mark and Todd cast by talking to Mark next time he comes to work.
To sponsor this.
To sponsor this segment.
Segment.
This sponsored segment by... I've got to cut off that sound at the beginning.
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
Anyway. This week I was trying to think of what we can put together that because we've both been really busy, so I didn't want it to take up too much time and research. So I thought a really interesting thing that we talked about, that we touched about a little bit on the nuclear power, where we answered the what is nuclear power question.
Nuclear power.
What is it? The submarine that you worked on in the Navy is or was a nuclear powered sub, correct?
Indeed, it
was. And you also do tours of the USS Blueback, which is the submarine that is stationed outside of OMSI. This pickle on my finger. I've got to get it off. Sorry. I just realized I was waving my gherkin.
Okay. All been there.
I need to shut that, else I'm never going to stop. Okay. Which is down by OMSI. And you do tours. You're one of many tour guides there. And so I mean, people know, I guess, a little bit about a sub, but two of the most interesting facts that I always whip out on people are things that I learned from you telling stories on the sub. And one of them is when you talk about somebody, I don't know if somebody asked you or you were talking about tall people that were on the submarines. And like, do they bump their heads? Like, because I mean, submarines, if you've even in a regular ship, you know, that's tight quarters and everything is exposed bolts and engineering and pipes and this and that. And you were asked if tall people bump your head. And you said that no, they don't, because they're used to looking around and navigating headspace, whereas short people bump their heads all the time.
So especially the specific scenario is...
which is my other interesting fact. So,
So
food.
The food on a submarine, we have only so much space on a submarine. And the limiting factor on a submarine is food. Like, we have plenty of fuel. We can go, especially in a nuclear submarine, you can go pretty much indefinitely. You are only going to run out of food. You can produce your own air. You can produce your own water. You've got a nuclear reactor that will last a decade.
How do you produce your own water?
we are surrounded by seawater. We take some of it in and we distill it. Mm. And so we create distilled water.
Okay.
And then from that distilled water, we can make air. So
the big reason I asked that, because another thing I was reading this week is they're coming out with a new technology to desalinate ocean water
with a big solar unit.
Yeah. And so yeah. I didn't know. I mean, I don't really know anything more about the process of desalination that they do now. It just doesn't seem like it's all that hard.
Right. Just
come on,
it.
Just take the salt out.
Right. We can make our own air.
An old-time distillery in the front, like with the guy in the hipster suspenders and like beard.
Episode of MASH in the swamp. And so we have to store tons and tons and tons and tons of food. Modern nuclear submarine will regularly make trips of 3 months long. The old diesel sub, the Blueback, was always prepared for a 3 month journey, but would only go for 2 months.
So the Blueback, and I think I said this already, is not a nuclear sub.
It's a diesel submarine. But okay. It had plenty of fuel to go, more than around the Earth. And so the only thing that...
I like when we oversolve problems like that. How far should it go? Around the Earth!
Twice. just in case you missed it the first time. And... we have just so much need for food that you're just going to run out of food right. first. So we
put, and how many people are on us
on the Blueback? It's 85 people. On my boat, it was like 135 people, but it was
okay.
built for, or it was 100. It was built for 180, and we normally had about 210. That's what it was.
Oh my gosh!
And so it was just overpacked with too many people. And so we had so much food that we would take what they're called number 10 cans, and they're the full size, like coffee can size,
like the old
of food.
Like grandpa playing kick the can Folgers
the big
crystals
Folgers can
right. Sanka.
And so we take hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of those, put them on the floor, and then put a little sheet of aluminum on top of that has a little rubber on it. And that becomes your new floor. Well, the ceiling of a submarine is already just right above my head. I'm
right.
5'11", and so it's like a 6'1". It's really tight quarters. Right.
And the doors are even shorter.
The watertight doors especially are just tiny. And so the cans raise up your... the walkway by...
Well, yeah, essentially the floor is being raised.
By 8 inches. And so the ceiling is effectively lowered by 8 inches. On our long deployments, because we had too many people and we would stay out too long, we did two layers of cans with the metal on top of it, which is not normal for submarines. And the tall guys were fine because they were always aware of where our heads were because
right.
we were always bumping into shit.
Right.
And you were
doing it anyway.
We were doing it.
Regardless of the space.
Right. And so we got used to stooping down and doing all this stuff. But
right.
the short people, once they stepped up on the cans, had never had their head in that space before.
Right.
And so I remember like my friend Scooter Skates. He was like 5'2".
Scooter. People liked him so much, they gave him two nicknames.
Totally. The Skates was his last name. And we called him Scooter. And... Seems like Skates would be a nice nickname in itself.
It's like when they have the zombie prom here every year. I think a yearly, whatever, everyone gets together. And every year they have to come up with a theme. And I remember when I was on Outlook Portland, which is the cable access show, Rick Emerson's show, he had me on to talk about zombie economics. And the other guest on the show was the lady that puts together the zombie prom or whatever. And she's like, this year's theme is, whatever. And I just kind of started giggling and I was like, isn't that already a theme? I mean, like, isn't that enough?
Zombie.
A zombie prom? I mean, how many layers deep is necessary for us to kind of like keep this?
Heroes and villains that are zombies.
And going to the prom.
Going to the prom. Yes.
Like distilling the layers a couple too many times.
And so lots of food and lots of banging of heads. Scooter Skates, he had like 14 stitches in his forehead and just bruised and cut and everything. The metal in the overhead just doesn't have much.
So gear. How do they, when you're going through the Navy, how do they act? First of all, how did you pick? Do they like, assign you, or is there like a, I would prefer
for
to.
The, for you, you fill out what's called a dream sheet. And so you, that's where you want to go.
Set on fire.
And then they just throw they that.
Laugh.
Totally. It's, and then they assign you where they, what the needs of the Navy are. So for submarines, you have to volunteer. It's an all volunteer force, but once you volunteer, you can't unvolunteer.
Okay.
And so what happened was I was part of a top secret submarine. And so all we did were special projects. And in order to be a part of that crew, you had to, there was basically a guy in a black suit that showed up to school one day. And
what?
And there were like 8 of us that were selected.
No way.
I swear.
See, because they always show that like in the first episode of Alias or whatever. She's just like walking innocently to her dorm room.
No. And
that really happens?
Yeah, it really happened. And so he pulled us aside and
so they must contact the school and like ask.
Right. So who are
you? Who's the biggest nerd? Who's the biggest nerd
who
here?
Who are the most gullible?
Who can go 3 months underwater with no human contact? Mark Middleton.
They're perfect. And so Kate brought us into a room and basically said, we've got special projects. We can't tell you anything about them. And do you want to volunteer? I'm like,
what?
Yes.
That is like every nerd kid's dream.
Totally. And so it turned out to be horrible.
It turned out it's all based on a lie, but that is brilliant. Right.
Totally. Everybody on board gets a top secret security clearance. And that process was fascinating because they go, I mean, this was early 90s. And so this was before really deep technology, you know,
right.
And Facebook and stuff, all the things. And so it was a very manual process and it took several months before I could go onto the submarine. They had to scour my past. And so
that must have taken some work.
My past was very boring. And so they basically put together every segment of your life to make sure that there weren't any gaps of you going overseas and meeting with the Russians.
To a Mossad.
Right. And so
that's right. Russia was our enemy at the time.
Enemy at the time still. And it was post, collapse of USSR, but it was still Russia right. it was still a major, almost,
I mean,
more
of a Rocky IV had just come out.
And Dolph Lundgren.
Was that Rocky III?
I don't know. Nobody knows. And so they scoured all then they go and interview all of your family and friends and like teachers from your elementary school. Like they just really scoured your
background. So at this point, this isn't everyone on this,
everybody on my submarine.
Okay. So this isn't anyone enlisting in the Navy.
Correct.
This is,
yeah, this was to get a top secret SBI security clearance. And then the funny thing. So I had a buddy, that I went through school with, his name was Tom Welch. And Tom
Zippy Spoonskins, we call them.
Thomas Roy Welch was his name. But when
a terrible nickname.
Totally. When he was growing up, he was given, his given name was Roy Thomas Welch. And he went by Tom, and because he went by his middle name, because he hated the name Roy.
Okay.
And so he always went by Tom Welch, right? So he goes through school, and he goes into the recruiter's office, and he tells the recruiter, my name is Thomas Welch, right? And so they fill out the 3 inches of paperwork to enlist him in the Navy.
Probably not even thinking.
Never like getting his driver's license, apparently, or anything like that. And so he was from like Moscow, Idaho, in the middle of podunk nowhere. And so he just went with this of Thomas Roy Welch. And
which we keep repeating over and over. So
well,
we can find him on the
becomes
internet.
Interesting, right? No, He's a good guy.
His address was.
he's actually, I looked him up on LinkedIn not too long ago. He's out there. He's doing stuff. Really good guy. He, when it came to the point of like enlisting, they did the cross-reference of all the stuff and they were like, but your name is Roy Thomas Welch. And he's like, well, I thought, you know, whatever. And he never thought of that. Right. So the recruiter, being the lazy genius that he is, submitted paperwork to change his name instead of redoing the 3 inches of paperwork.
That's American efficiency right there. He
just filled out one more sheet to change his name.
That is great.
Which put the major roadblock in getting a top secret security clearance. If you have no reason to change your name, then you are obviously a spy. Right. And so they interrogated him. they brought him into, like, as he's getting towards on base, they like literally they pull him into a car and they talk to him in the car for 3 hours.
Oh my god.
And like,
I'm picturing like the bare concrete room and he's like shirtless, strapped to a chair, and there's the swinging light bulb back and forth.
They're like, no. Why did you change your name? It's like, we were lazy. Isn't the answer. Like, they needed an answer.
Right.
And there wasn't an answer more than my recruiter was lazy.
We didn't want to fill the paperwork out again. We didn't want to do
more paperwork.
That is awesome.
I mean, it became this long, drawn-out ordeal. And then he finally got this clearance and went to the boat. But it was hilarious.
Wow. So how long, like when you, so you go through, you went through engineering, the...
Yeah, so my tour of...
I'm glad you can string together the inarticulate string of consonants I just emitted there and so, pulled out meaning.
So I enlisted for 6 years in the Navy in a guaranteed program to be a nuclear power, to be a nuclear enlisted person. And there's three major paths of the nuclear field for enlisted. And so you can either be an electronic technician that is the reactor operator.
Okay.
You can be an electrician who usually manages the pushing of the boat with the throttles. And so they manage the throttlemen and the electric plant. Or a mechanic. And the mechanic does all of the piping, hydraulic systems, fluid systems, oil systems, all those things.
All right.
And so you don't get guaranteed which of those three tracks you get on.
Oh, wow.
But you just get, you will be a nuke as long as you don't fail out of the program.
Okay.
Right. And so they give you a big financial incentive and you have to pass some tests and do all this stuff. So I went through boot camp and then I went into electronics school. And so I was in electronics school for 8 months. Became an electronic technician.
Is that where you did that series of problem solving tests or whatever, and they thought you were cheating or something?
That was later on in my career. You were like
such a freak.
R31.
You're counting toothpicks that have been spilled on the floor.
I was troubleshooting the ANSPS-64 radar system, and there was a R31 that was, and I diagnosed it using the knobs on the front, and they couldn't believe that that was possible. And I proved it to them that it was. And I took a single point and proved the failure. And they thought that I was cheating based looking at the card and looking for the points on the card to cheat with. And I didn't, but he, once I proved my process.
Right.
They,
it's like Captain Kirk solving the Kobayashi Maru.
Kobayashi Maru.
I don't believe it. I don't even know what those they sound like. I'm assuming somewhere in the episode, someone said that.
Well, it was Ali Sheedy.
I don't know. I don't think Ali Sheedy was in Star Trek.
No. From Short Cheers. Circuit.
Oh.
No, not Ali Sheedy. Who is she?
She got kind of big. Christy Alley.
Christy Alley.
You're doing like the balloon man.
I love Christy Alley.
So the hand motions with that.
So,
oh yeah, she was in one of, in
she was the other cat. She was the other player during that, the Kobayashi Maru, and she's like, "But you cheated." That was the introduction of her into the world.
See, I've never actually seen that before. That's funny. I learned something tonight.
Yay! Electronic school. I did 8 months of electronic school, and then went 6 months of nuclear power school, followed by 6 months of nuclear prototype. And what they do is they send you out to the middle of the desert.
Because you were in like Idaho or something.
Yeah, Idaho. I was at the Idaho National Engineering Laboratory.
Anything naval related.
Yeah. And I was out there in Idaho for 6 months practicing on a live reactor.
So now that's the part that is curious to me. So there's a nuclear reactor. Power reactor. Like,
yes.
To me, who is a moron, that sounds terrifying. Like you're sitting at a tiny desk behind the huge cooling tower, like on The Simpsons. You're just like twiddling knobs. But how does that work? Because when we talked about what is nuclear power, we talked about how, you know, we're making steam, you know, and all that. And so all of that is taking place on the boat with nuclear material.
Yes. So
it is terrifying.
It is terrifying. So On the boat itself, there is a core of uranium. And
is it green like you always see? Glowing green?
We never get to see it. So I spent my whole career never looking at uranium. I have no idea. You know, it's metal.
That's weird.
And so in that uranium core, there are rods of hafnium that go down into it and that slow down the reactor fission. When you pull out the rods, it gets hotter and heats water. Take that water, put it through a heat exchanger, and boil some more water to make steam. Take that steam, and you can turn turbines.
Okay.
And so with those turbines, we make electricity and push the boat through the water.
Okay.
And so we're, my name, the name of the boat that I was on was Parchy. The USS Parchy.
It's kind of unfortunate.
I know. It's the name of a fish. And
is it? I always think Parcheesi, that old board game that nobody knows how to play, but inexplicably shows up in your grandmother's house.
Totally. Somehow.
Right next to the carom board. Do you remember that thing? It was like the size of one of the leaves on this table, maybe like two and a half feet by 2.5 feet square. And it was made out of wood. And in each corner, they had a tiny net. Right. And then
I have no idea what
it was like a tiny, had a tiny pool cue and then like a tiny little disc.
Tiny checkers, but
with a pool cue.
Right. And I don't know where we were.
Tiny pool cues. Tiny.
And the USS Parchy, so we were Parchy Power and Light, and so we made electricity and pushed the boat through the water, but it's a submarine, which is amazing and incredible feat of engineering, built by the lowest bidder, and so it's got its own nuclear power plant aboard that is providing all of the electricity and propulsion and all of the services like that. And all of that electricity and propulsion is being used to make fresh water, for example, and make oxygen by taking water and using electrolysis to split it into hydrogen and oxygen. We take the hydrogen and diffuse it overboard.
Like, where is this all happening in a submarine? Like, I'm picturing like a lab, like the beginning of The Amazing Spider-Man, where they're making different species of spiders.
Many different compartments and rooms of machinery and torpedoes and science. Offices and science and the engine room.
So when you get through with your training and you get on the boat sub for the first time, how long did you go out and how did they prepare you guys like mentally for living in
they
a
don't
tube.
Care. they really don't
prepare you
they
mentally.
Don't mentally they just throw you to the wolves.
They gave you a top secret clearance button to put on your thing and you were super happy about it.
I won't tell anyone. And so I was
like in school, did they have you at least live in like tiny little quarters that you couldn't get out of, or they didn't prepare you at all for living on a submarine?
No, it's like going to college. You're in a stupid little dorm room with nerds. And
that's true, I guess.
And so then they do a lot with our schedule to shove you through school as quickly as they can. And by doing so, when we worked out at the prototype out at in Idaho, we worked three different shifts in a rotating fashion. So we worked 5 days on 12-hour shifts, and then had a day off, and then 4 days on swing shifts, 12-hour shifts, and then graveyard shifts the next day. And so we did this rotating, so you're like 5 on, 1 off, 4 on, 2 off, 5 on, and it was just this, just you were always there,
right,
and always training, and it was just excruciating hours whatever. But we learned a lot. It was 6 months long, and then you go to the submarine, and you're like, oh, that was easy compared to, when you're underway, the shifts are basically 6 hours on and 12 hours off continuously. And so it's an 18-hour day instead of a 24-hour day.
Okay.
And it becomes very disorienting. There's no windows aboard. And so
there's no way to track time in any sort of meaningful way.
No. Yeah. So it's like, what meal is being served? If it's pancakes, it's probably a 6 a.m.
Right.
versus a 6 p.m.
And there's nowhere to go. Like when you're off shift, it's not like, oh, let's
go
down the road, or let's go lay by myself somewhere.
Go to your rack and play my Sega Game Gear. And then I learned to play guitar. I brought a guitar aboard because
you're a guitar guy in close space.
No, I was down in the engine room in the diesel room. So I was away from everybody else.
Nothing is worse than guitar guy in close space where people are trying to rest. Because you can't yell at
guitar.
I was
the church guy. So I was, brought the guitar for church and stuff. So
okay.
I was the Protestant lay leader of the USS Parche.
Nice.
And
with your guitar.
Good times.
Wow. So the first time you were out, then how long were you out?
We went for we would do a lot of testing trips where we would get certified and do it. So we would do like two week, 3 week, 5 week, kind of.
So this would have been like what year then? Is this after the, this must have been after the
92 to 95?
Okay,
92 to 95. So so after the Gulf War, so. I am a war veteran, and I have a medal from being in the military during the Gulf War. We called it the CNN medal because we were in school and we watched the war on CNN.
Right. Oh, that's funny.
There are many men and women who deserved that, and I was not one of those people. And so I
you still will accept the free wings at Hooters or whatever you do every Veterans Day.
Yes, I do.
It's my yearly surprise. What is Mark doing at Hooters? Oh, free wings on Veterans Day.
Veterans Day. I love Hooters on Veterans Day. There's nothing better. And Nick gets so anxious. He just freaks him out. Yeah.
I've only been to one Hooters in college, and I just felt very sad the whole time.
It's very weird.
So you had weaponry on the boat, but you weren't like an attack sub or anything. You were like
technically we were an attack sub, so we had torpedoes, and we would do training missions in the North Pacific is what our mission was.
Okay.
So
yeah, you can neither confirm nor deny a lot of very interesting things I've heard over the years.
There's some great books out there, some great Wikipedia articles about the USS Parche.
About your boat specifically.
Yeah. There's a book called Blind Man's Bluff.
I remember you talking about this book.
Yeah. And so it was put together by these two authors, and one of the authors was a lady named Sherry Sontag. And she would go to our bar, the Horse and Cow, and she would get guys drunk and take them home. And,
tell me more about your experience, sailor.
So cool, and they'd be like, well, and pretty soon she was writing a book.
Wow.
And so she got crazy details.
Yeah.
About the operations that were the most top secret operations in submarine history.
Wow.
And yeah, so if you want to read some really interesting stuff, I can't confirm that any of that is true or not,
right, sure.
But Sherry claims a lot of it, and it's called Blind Man's Bluff. It's a great book.
Nice. So. Now, have you been able to do anything real? You got the top secret certification or whatever. Have you been able to do anything neat with it or what? Like,
no, it's good bragging rights.
I was gonna say, like, was there even a cool double door to open when you held your pass up or something like that? Well,
you know, in nuclear training and I mean, you got to go aboard a submarine and that was cool. But, you know, honestly, I did get to read a lot of, like, it was my job to learn about Chernobyl,
right?
From
Chernobyl
and 3 Mile Island from the top secret documents that were prepared by the Navy.
Yeah.
And so they were encased in red and kept in the captain's stateroom. And so you had to go ask the captain for access to the 3 Mile Island case.
Right.
But you could get all of the details about everything that was ever happened and exposed to anything.
That's cool.
And so that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But that wasn't, that was not specific to our submarine. That was as a nuclear power plant operator for the Navy.
Right.
And so we got access to a lot of information around that to make us safer.
Okay.
And that's kind of cool. It's interesting. Like right now there are 71 or 72 submarines in the United States fleet, and they're all nuclear powered now.
Okay.
The Blueback, the SS-581 that's down here at OMSI in Portland, Oregon, it was the last of the diesel electric submarines. And so that was decommissioned in 1994. So everything since 1994 has been nuclear powered.
Okay.
And there are...
How is something like the nuclear fuel delivered? Like it's an envelope or... Like you said, you never saw it.
No, I never saw it because I was never there for a refueling.
Okay.
But a refueling process, you know, they...
So they... They fill it up like a tank. You don't...
A train, and they bring it into the shipyard, and there's cranes, and there's stuff, and they basically build the whole core housing out in Idaho or wherever they're doing it, and they crane it into a hole in the submarine and, you know, place it in there.
Wow.
It's a crazy process. And
that's so weird. Yeah,
but you think, like, the Nautilus traveled 60,000 miles on enough fuel that took up the size of a golf ball.
Jeez.
The equivalent amount of diesel necessary would have been like 30 million gallons.
Oh my gosh.
And it's just unbelievable the amount of power that is available at the quantum level, at the nuclear physics level, that is able to be harnessed. And so
were there, is, because you always hear with nuclear power plants, you know, the meltdowns and the dangers and stuff like that, are all those similar to the sub, or is it such a small amount, or does it work on a different level that it's not like you guys are going to have a meltdown? I mean, something dangerous probably can
happen. So, like, the difference between...
Or, like, if you got hit by a torpedo or something like that, you don't get a nuclear bomb, do you?
Well, no.
I say, knowing nothing about science.
One of the beautiful things about being on a ship or a submarine is you are encased, you are surrounded by the best insulation unit ever. Water is a fantastic insulator of nuclear anything. And so if there were an issue, it would be the boat is designed to basically take on that water into the reactor compartment, which would encase it in water, and then it would sink to the bottom. And it would be a very tragic thing at that bottom of that part of the ocean. But it wouldn't harm
because it would just be leaking things, or it would explode, or what?
It wouldn't explode necessarily. It might. Yeah, it would be impossible to know exactly what the situation would be.
Right.
But it's surrounded by lead, and that lead, if that heated up, would create a a big lead ball around it that would keep all of the material on the inside. Right. And so in terms of, you know, number of people affected by tragedies, you know, I think of...
Well, basically, you can just hit the eject button on a sub and, like, it kind of takes care of itself. Right. Like jettisoning into space.
Yeah, exactly. I think of, like, the explosions that we see in China and other right. things that are just manufacturing explosions.
Right.
The coal industry, the number of lives that that's taken and other things. Nuclear power is... has such a bad tone because right. it's so not able to be understood by the mass.
Right.
And so you have Chernobyl.
And it's tied to nuclear war.
Right. And yeah, nuclear shares the same word with nuclear right. warhead and everything, right. which is totally a different situation.
Right.
But we've had Chernobyl and we've had Three Mile Island and we've had the one in Japan. The exception, other than it was in a place that is frequented by the tidal waves.
Oh, the tsunamis.
Yeah, the tsunamis. And so that is...
I was thinking mutant fish or something like that.
No, that... so that's a megalodon. But, like, Chernobyl should have never happened. It was so poorly engineered.
Right.
They turned off all of their safety features so that they could do some training. Then they failed to follow their procedures, and then they failed to do that. Like, it was like 25 different failures in a row that any one of those would have stopped wow. the casualty.
Right.
And many people lost their lives in trying to contain the destruction that was there. And Kiev is, you know, the whole town of... that's right around Chernobyl is still a wasteland.
Yeah.
And
the pictures from there are really, really gorgeous.
And, but yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah.
But that's not indicative of, a modern reactor engineered in the United States.
Because, I mean, I looked it up a couple of weeks ago, I think, but the number of nuclear power plants in the U.S., I think, was a couple hundred at least.
Yeah, and it's dwindling.
Well, but, I mean, I can't remember the last time I've ever heard anything about any of them.
No.
I mean, Three Mile Island was, what, in the 80s? The mid-80s?
76.
76?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the last... Yeah, the last thing that you've ever kind of heard of any sort of, I mean, outside of Fukushima, but I mean, that was, there's right. some extenuating circumstances there for that one.
Exactly.
Took an earthquake and a tsunami to take that out.
Right.
Yeah. Can't really plan for that. So when you, so now that you're doing tours on the Blue Back down by OMSI, and one of your favorite things, and every once in a while, I mean, we text back and forth during the week and stuff like that. And it's not like we have long phone conversations, but whenever I get a text, it's like 50-50 or trying out a new dad joke for your submarine tour. So I want you to tell me some goodness. Of both a joke or two that always goes over really, really well. And you're like totally pandering because you know it's going to be a crowd pleaser, and then ones that don't, but you still like sure. that you still tried a couple times. Cause I know you don't just give up once you try,
you hone
the material, you deliver it to the mirror every morning.
Poor people that go on the tour that have to listen to my attempts at humor is so, so sad. For
and every
them.
Time I'm on tour on the back going, ha.
So I, a lot of them are just little shticky things,
yeah.
you know? And so I'll be like, you know, there's a lot of rain around. And so your feet are kind of slippery. Just be really careful on the stairs, hold on to the handrail. There's no falling allowed. And, yeah, and the submarine, we have a lot of switches and dials and things that you want to press. Don't, it's a real submarine. Smiling is the new touching. And, you know, it doesn't always hit,
right.
But,
well, it's, it yeah, there's that element. And growing up, we always used to call it like dad or like mom and dad humor, right. but not like a dad joke, but it's just right. that cornball,
right.
you know,
right.
wah, wah type thing.
And so one that revealed itself, people just started laughing at this and still laugh at it every single time. And it wasn't meant as a joke.
As all great itself. Jokes do.
What it was, We talk, there's a set of models of other submarines, and one of them is the largest submarine in the world, and it's built by the Russians, and it's called the Typhoon, and it's, you know, 560 feet long, and it's got its own swimming pool, and it's got a little lap pool for exercise, and it's got hardwood floors, and, you know, it's where the Russians spent all of their budget before the Sochi Olympics. And people always are laughing at
it. Did you add the Sochi Olympics part? Was that like, because I don't remember that, part.
Well, that happened during the Sochi Olympics. Yes. I
because, you keep telling me, and like, I'm just as confused as you are, because that's not even really a joke.
No, it's, and this is where the Russians spent all of their budget. And every single time people laugh at it. And I had no problem. So the one that I really yearn for people to laugh
you
at.
You workshopped it a lot.
And they just don't. They just, it's happened. I get maybe 1 out of 10. And so I've stopped it. It's dropped off the tour. You can make a request for it, but it's not something that's there anymore. So there's one section of the area where I'm just talking about like life on the boat. And so I talk a lot about the smells and the sounds and the lack of laundry facilities. And there's just, you're only allowed to take a shower once every week or two, whether you need it or not. And you know, all this stuff. And I talk about the smell of fuel oil being in the air, diesel oil being in the air. And then the smell of Up Dog after I do that, I'm like, yeah, and Up Dog, it really gets on your skin and it just sticks to everything. And I'll pause and I'll take a little drink.
A little sip, like the Kermit the Frog meme.
Right.
Nothing's in my business.
Nothing. And I'll just let the Up Dog sit there with them. And then there's every once in like a blue moon, somebody will be like, well, what's Up Dog? And if they don't, then I'm like, you know what that is, right?
And you're like, I have to throw them a leash, totally, to drag them to your joke. The joke is over here. You have to come with me.
And
ask me what's Up Dog.
And they're like, nothing, honey. But not much. But thanks for asking.
What's up with you?
And
oh my gosh, that's awful.
The best reaction was this mom and her teenage son were there, and I got her to say it. She said it. She's like, "Well, what's up, dog?" And I go, "Not much, but thanks for asking." And the son wouldn't stop laughing and making fun of her for the rest of the tour. And so it's like, Up Dog. That was worth all the 90 all of the tours of people just deadpan staring at me like, what is he saying? I have no idea what he just said.
And you've been trying to find a replacement joke for there. I don't know if that's just a lull in here in the tour there. Like you're turning everyone around and you just need something to say.
I hear a rumor that you can like hire Bruce Valanche to write jokes for you.
Yes, that's me.
I think you told me that. Yes. And so I've been thinking of like framing up the situation and trying,
you're going to get a punch up guy. They talk about that. Yeah. They do that in Hollywood too. And like, you'll always notice it in animated movies because they'll come in after the script is all written. And then most of the animation is done and all the recording is done. And they only have time to do like a little additional dialogue. And so lots of times in the animated movies, it's just all jokes coming from off screen, like someone saying something because they can't go back and reanimate them talking or reacting. So it's always just like some guy like
cartoon pickups.
Waffles or whatever from the side to like punch it up a little bit. But that was always my dream job. I wanted to do that around Portland for a bit after I did the Emerson roast thing because it was so great for people just to come to me and like, can you write all these jokes? Can you write all these terrible things about other people in Portland for me under the cloak of anonymity? Yes, I can.
I'm here for you.
But I thought, because I mean, people do corporate speaking and they do all stuff. I mean, there's got to be, I wonder if you can talk to, what's that place that nobody
nobody goes to.
Nobody goes to anymore.
The library?
No, they teach you how to, they teach you how to talk good. Oh. Roast masters, is that
oh,
it?
Oh, no, Toastmasters.
Toastmasters. Yeah, I bet you they would have some ins on how, who, like, as the people come through there, they're referred to you to give them a joke or two, to punch up their thing about, you know.
Toastmasters is so weird. Like, you, I would think that,
And I mean, is that just, is that a place that you learn public speaking?
Right.
Basically is what that is. Because I didn't even really hear about it, or I must have just thought it was like a old-timey thing.
It's kind of like a club.
It seems like the Rotary Club of public speaking.
But you, like, I worked at a place in Vancouver, Washington that made silicon, and they had a Toastmasters group.
They made what?
Silicon for, like, chips.
Silicone?
No, silicone. Silicon goes in your breasts.
That's what my breasts are silicone. Made of.
Silicon?
Yeah. Spelled different?
Yeah.
Now, is that different? So all the chips in the computers are silicon chips, not silicone.
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
Silicon.
Where does that place?
Versus silicone. Yeah, one has an E, one does not.
But it's the Silicon Valley, isn't it? It's not the Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley. Silicon is a non-metallic element. Silicone is a class of silicon-based chemical compounds used in paints, adhesives, lubricants, and breast implants.
I hate the word lubricant.
Silicon. Silicon.
Well, silicon. I'll be jiggered.
No. Silicone.
See?
Silicone.
Well, anyway, I want to live in the Silicon Valley. Zing! Oh, where's my morning show? Hold on. I wasn't prepared for...
Silicone. Well played. And on that note... thanks for listening to the Mark and Todd cast.
Yes. I suppose we'll go out there.
My name is Mark, by the way.
My name is Mark. Todd's the smart one. And I am Todd Workhoven, and thank you for listening. It means a lot to us. And get a hold of us. Drop us a line. Ask if you have a topic you want to hear discussed, or if you have any ideas or thoughts, let us know. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or probably just by talking to us because you know us.
Exactly. Hi, Megan.
Oh, and since we didn't use the, read any of our stories. We'll
sorry. Don't we have a new listener? Your father is.
No, they're old school listeners.
Oh, they're old school listeners.
Dad's new to Facebook.
Oh, but he not just to wanted know, to.
Oh, no,
post
they're old
on,
school.
Oh,
yeah. Right.
I know your mom was listening. Yeah. And, no, they, so we love them.
They travel around a lot. And so they'll always load up their iPod or whatever they have with MP3s and books on tape and
the cassette tape.
The cassette tape. And they listen to us as they drive around the Northwest. Oh, so thanks,
awesome.
Mom.
Very
and Dad.
Awesome.
Anyway.
All right. Play us
all
out.
All right. Talk to you next time.
Is still just beyond our grasp. Still just beyond our grasp. We need a theory of everything. We need a theory, perhaps the ultimate triumph. The ultimate triumph of science.